Okay, we're at 1 o'clock right now, so I know we're all eager to get started. Thank you all for
Okay.
coming, and thank you, Simi Peters, for being here with us again today. I just want to announce we have some other great classes starting this week. Dr. Simkovich has a class on the meaning of Torah in early Judaism starting tomorrow, Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And Michelle Margolis-Chesner has a class starting tomorrow, Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, The People In of and Around the Books. Both of those are three-part series, so if you want to catch them, please make sure you tune in tomorrow. Also, I'll post in the chat a link to all of our programs because we have some other classes starting this week as well, including one this week for Yom HaZikaron. So take it away, and I will post in the chat. Anyone can message me directly with any other questions. Okay, thank you so much. I'm going
Okay,
to mute everybody now, okay?
okay. I just want to remind everybody that I don't read chat while I'm teaching. It's too much multitasking, and I'm afraid I can't do that. I will try to leave some time for questions, and I'm happy to stay a few minutes after class if people have further questions. So feel free. Just a suggestion, I sometimes suggest this in my other Zoom classes, and I forgot to do this last week. Sometimes to not lose a question that you have, it really pays to jot it down just next to you. And again, you can always reach me through the Torah in Motion website if you want to contact me after class or between classes. So, again, feel free. I try very much to answer people's emails. So okay, so let's just remind ourselves where we were. Last week we had started Perek Aleph, and we were talking about two things fundamentally, or let's say one particular thing fundamentally, and which is why I titled the heading of the class Rut v'Orpah. The fact that Rut and Orpah start out as indistinguishable. Essentially indistinguishable, everything they do together until there's a sharp moment of division. And we started to talk about the, and I believe we covered this, right? We talked about the difference between Avraham and Lot, right? Is this coming back to you, ladies and gentlemen? We talked about the difference between Avraham and Lot. What triggered the question, or the fundamental question, the reason the question was so significant, is because Chazal, using hyperbole, using deeply exaggerating Orpah's actions, very sharply criticize Orpah to an extent that seems almost exaggerated. And again, the exaggeration is part of their methodology. They don't expect us to take literally the things that they are saying about Orpah, but fundamentally, what they're underlining here, I should say, emphasizing here, highlighting for us, is that sometimes a person who's a nice person ends up making a decision or doing things like, she's a nice girl, Lot's a nice boy, that lead to a very, very dark place. That the, again, as I borrowed that French proverb, the good, the excellent is the enemy of the good. That there is a distinction to be made between those who make the hard choices or go that extra mile and the person who isn't quite good enough. And I'd like to suggest here, and I'm just going to point this out. I'd like to suggest here that this is actually a motif in Tanakh that we see elsewhere. So, for example, right at the beginning of Sefer Bereishit, we have Cain and Hevel, Cain and Abel both bring offerings to God, and one of them isn't quite good enough, right? Hevel's offering is accepted, Cain's offering is not accepted. The same thing, as I said, we saw very clearly with Abraham and Lot. Abraham looks like Lot, he smells like Lot, he walks like a duck, he talks like a duck, he's not a duck. He's not Abraham Avinu. He's not at that level. And it manifests itself more through his followers than it does through himself, but There it is. Okay. We also see in a less dramatic way a difference between Yehuda and Reuven. We talked about this a little bit. Reuven is the firstborn by birth, but Yehuda is the firstborn by, in terms of leadership qualities, in terms of temperament. The kings come from Yehuda and not from Reuven. And I think David and Shaul. Shaul, were he not followed by David, perhaps would have been considered a good king. He's a failure as a king because he's followed by a truly exemplary, remarkably successful king, a man who actually restructures the entire kingdom of Israel and makes it a kingdom in the best sense. We see it here with Ruth and Orpah. And I think perhaps the height of this is in the Yom Kippur service, where you have two identical goats, right? The Seir LaHashem and the Seir LaAzazel. They have to be twins. They have to be born of the same mother. They have to look exactly the same markings, the same quality, the same everything. One is for Hashem and one is will be cast out in the desert in a different ritual, not in a korban. So there is in Ruth this sort of like diamond hard quality of persistence, which is not in Orpah. And Orpah has to know that in going back to Moab, she is opting for a life which can only produce a Goliath and not a David. Right? Her children will not be righteous or virtuous people. They will not be what they can be or could have been. And again, as a personal choice, perhaps that doesn't stick out so dramatically, but it actually is a devastatingly bad decision on the part of Orpah, and one which she can justify to herself, because what she can say to herself, and again, I just want to go back to the psukim here, she can say to herself, and perhaps this is what does indeed send her away, that she's a, like I said, she's a nice woman. She wants to go with her mother-in-law. She is trying to offer support and comfort. And Naomi tries to send her daughters-in-law away. But her final words here in Pasuk Yud Aleph, and well, Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, and Yud Gimel, Vatomer Naomi, Shovna Bnotai Lama Telach Naimi, Naomi said, return my daughters, why should you go with me? Ha'odli banim b'me'ai v'ayulachem anashim, do I still have sons in my innards, and they will be to you husbands? Shovna Bnotai Lechna, return my daughters, go away. Ki zakanti mihiot le'ish, I'm too old to be with a man. Ki amalti yesh li tikva, because if I thought that I still had hope, Gam hayiti halayla leish v'gam yaladeti banim. I would also be this night with a man, and I would also give birth to sons. Halahen tisabelna ad asher yigdalu, for them will you wait until they grow up. Halahen te'agena levilti heot leish, for them will you be anchored so as not to be with a man. Al benotai, this is the thing that sends Orpah away. Albinotai, don't my daughters, ki marli me'od mikem, because it is very bitter to me because of you or from you, ki yatz'a biyad Hashem, because the hand of Hashem has come out against me. In other words, you're very dear, you're very sweet, I wish you a good life, I appreciate the intention, but you are a constant reminder of my misfortune and my loss. I was punished because my sons married Moabite women. I was punished because we went to Moab. Please go away. And here we see the difference between the two women. Vatisena kolan vativkena od. They lifted their voices and they wept again, or they wept more. Vatishak Orpah lechamota v'rut davkaba. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law and Ruth clung to her, cleaved to her. She stuck to her, right? And what does Naomi then say? Vatomer hinei shava yivimtech el amav el Eloheha. Naomi is very clear-eyed about this. she said, here, your sister-in-law has returned to her people and to her gods. I know she's gone back. Shuvi acharei yevimtech, return following your sister-in-law. The Tomer Rut, and Ruth said, please, if you are not muted, please mute. I'm getting feedback here, so please mute yourself. But Tomer Ruth and Ruth said, Al tifki'i bi l'ozvech, do not injure me, do not hurt me, do not plead with me. You have two ways to read that word, lifgoa. Do not plead with me to leave you. Lashuv me'acharayich, to return from behind you, meaning to go back. Because where you go, I will go. Uva asher talini alin, and where you lie down, I will lie down. Amecha, me, your people are my people. Velokai chelokai, and your God is my God. Your Lord is my Lord. Vasher tamuti amut, in the manner that you die, I will die. Visham ekavel, and there I will be buried. Thus may God do to me, and thus may he add. It's a language of oath. She's taking an oath. Only death, right? Death will separate you and me, meaning only death will separate the two of us. Now, essentially what Ruth does here is she is saying, I don't care how you feel. You have no right to send me away. I want what you have, and I need what you have. And I think here we see something very, very striking about Ruth, which is that she has been in Moab, and she has lived her whole life in Moab, and only when she encounters Naomi, does she discover something that can be for her the meaning of her life. It's almost like she's been a stranger in her own society. And when she meets Naomi, that's when she discovers what is missing, right? The long dormant positive side of Lot. Remember, we said that David and Goliath are the divided soul of Lot facing each other on the battlefield, and David wins and Goliath loses. And here we really have to ask, and we haven't talked about it yet, even though we've seen mention of the word chesed here in Pasuk Chet, when Naomi says to the two daughters-in-law, may Hashem do kindness with you, chesed with you, as you did with me and with my dead sons. We have to ask ourselves, what is it that makes the difference between Ruth and Naomi? Because the text doesn't tell us. I'm sorry, Ruth and Orpah. The text doesn't actually tell us, right? They're like, they're, you know, they look the same. They're the same person until they're suddenly not the same person, right? And that is the question. And I'm going to suggest, and as we get a little bit further and we explore the chesed motif, the kindness motif, we're going to see what is it that is the difference between them. Okay. What is Naomi's response to this? Naomi saw that she was making an effort to go with her, meaning she kept... Amita Metzet probably in biblical Hebrew means something like she was making herself brave to follow her. She stopped speaking to her, which doesn't mean she stopped speaking to her. She stopped trying to push her away. She really wants to go. Orpah did not really want to go in the same way. And the two of them walked until they came to Beit Lechem. Vahi kivo'ana Beit Lechem, and when they came to Beit Lechem, vatehom kol ha'ir alehen, the whole city like was murmuring, was like talking about them. Vatomagna, the whole city, by the way, is the women, right? The verb is in the feminine. You know, you ever have your husband come home from shul and you say, so what's new? What's new in shul? And he says nothing. And then, you know, a week later, you find out that there's a huge scandal that was being talked about. Your husband didn't even hear it. Like, you know, the women, if they were there, they would have heard it. But the Tomagna, the women said, Hazot Naomi? Is this Naomi? When they see Naomi leave, she's leaving as the wife of a wealthy man. She has two children. She is presumably young, healthy. We're going to see there's a midrash that says that she was even expecting a child, but she's young. She's young, successful, happy, whatever, all of those things. This is Naomi. She's a broken person. And she said to them, don't call me Naomi. Because Noah means pleasantness, Naomi, pleasantness. Kir'ena li mara, call me bitterness or bile. Call me bitterness. Ki hemar shakai li ma'od. Because shakai, another name for God, has embittered me very much. Anim le'ahalachti, I went full. Ruth Rabba says on this pasuk, the Midrash says, I went full, meaning she was pregnant. V'rekam heshivani Hashem. Hashem returned me empty. Lama tikrena li Naomi? Why should you call me Naomi? V'Hashem anabi. Hashem punished me. V'shake herali. And God did evil to me. She is justifying that evil, right? She's not complaining against Hashem, but she says, look at me, I've been punished. And now I want to just take a quick look here at the last pasuk, because the last pasuk is really rather important. V'tashan Naomi v'rut ha-Moavia kalata ima ha-shava miste Moav, and Naomi returned, again, singular verb, because Ruth is not returning. She is coming for the first time. And Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law with her, who was returning from the fields of Moab, again in the feminine singular. Vehema ba'ul Beit Lechem b'tchilat k'til so'im. And they came into Beit Lechem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Okay. The beginning of the barley harvest is around this time. And it's basically before Pesach, the barley harvest starts, and then it's the wheat harvest. From the beginning, the first, remember, why are we counting the Omer? Let's think about this for a moment. Okay, why do we count the Omer? What are we counting here? Okay, we're counting the seven-week period from Pesach to Shavuot. The barley harvest starts around Pesach time. And we count up from the barley harvest to the end of the wheat harvest, which is Shavuot. Let's say 7 weeks. If we say it starts a little bit before Pesach and ends maybe a little bit after Shavuot, it's roughly a period of two and a half, maybe 3 months is the period we're talking about, the beginning of the hot summer weather when you start to harvest the grain and then that it's too hot, right? And you're no longer harvesting grain. Okay. Now, this period coincides with between Pesach and Shavuot. And in the counting, what we're doing is and of course, Pesach corresponds to Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus from Egypt. Shavuot is Matan Torah, the receiving of the Torah. And there is a deep psycho-spiritual movement of the nation from slavery to the service of God. And it's summed up in that period of from Pesach to Shavuot, and it is reflected in the agriculture and in the natural circumstances, because barley is the food of animals, right? And wheat is the food of people. And the Omer, right, was brought, the measure of barley was brought, roughly chopped stalks and all, raw barley was brought as an offering at the beginning of that period. And then we count days up toward Matan Torah. And the korban that is brought on Shavuot, the offering, the grain offering that is brought on Shavuot, is composed of baked bread, which means refined flour that has been formed into loaves for human consumption. Symbolically, I think what we're moving through every year in that cycle as a people, what we're moving through is the movement from being people who have no control over their destiny, people who are slaves, who are in a sense like animals, beasts of burden, right? They don't take responsibility, they can't take responsibility, to people who are rising spiritually, in a spiral upward toward becoming full people. And it's symbolically represented in that. Now, at the time, right, why does Naomi return to Eretz Yisrael at this point? Because she heard that God had remembered to give his people bread, right? But the transformation which Ruth is going to undergo very much tracks with the transformation that the Jewish people undergo from slavery to Matan Torah, to the giving of the Torah. So unbeknownst to either Ruth or Naomi, this is a perfect time for Ruth to be coming to Eretz Yisrael and becoming part of the Jewish people. And it's also, I think it's also important to note that there was something else I wanted to say. She has moved. Okay, Naomi moves from Beit Lechem, house of bread, to stay Moab, to the fields of Moab, out to the outskirts of Moab. Again, because Moab is a place where they don't give people bread, right? Ruth is entering the house of bread. She's making her first entrance into that concept of house, of home, which characterizes the Jewish people. And as much as anything, what is about to follow is the story of Ruth becoming a new person, gaining a new identity. That's a lot of what's happening in this text. Okay, any questions before we go on? Because I want to really move on to the next parak. This is a good place to stop. We're good? Okay, so let's take a look at the next parak, which introduces another motif. The title, what I have titled here is Lehakireni, to recognize me. Okay, and we're going to talk about that too, the whole motif of recognition and its implications in Megillat Rut. Okay, so hang on, let me just get the spotlight. Okay, so there they are, they're back. Okay, Ule Naomi Modal Isha. And Naomi had a relative of her husband's, Ish Gibo Chayil, a valorous man, Mimishpachat Elimelech, from the family of Elimelech, Ushmo Boaz, and his name was Boaz. Now, Boaz means strength is in him, or in him is strength. Now, Boaz is going to be an interesting question also. Who is Boaz? What is Boaz? And what is the big question that I am going to have, which I will offer to you to share with me, is what does Boaz do or fail to do and why? Okay. Now, Rashi here gives us the family tree. So we're going to skip down to the Rashi here. Moda, which comes from the same root as Yada, someone known closely, right? Karov, meaning a relative. Boaz ben Achiv shel Elimelech haya. Boaz was Elimelech's nephew. Amru Rabotenu zechornam livracha, which, by the way, which means that he is Machlon and Kilion's first cousin, right? Which he is Ruth's cousin-in-law. Okay. אמרו רבותינו זכרונם לברכה, חזל סד, אלי מלך ושלמון אבי בועז, ופלוני אלמוני הגואל, ואבי נומי, כולם בני נחשון בן אמינדב היה. Okay, so נחשון בן אמינדב, whom we remember from jumping in at Yitziat Mitzrayim at the splitting of the Red Sea, right? Remember that? Nachshon ben Aminadab had four sons. One of them was Elimelech. One was Shalmon, who was the father of Boaz. One of them is Ploni Almoni, which means Mr. Anonymous, John Doe. We don't know who he is. Hagoel, he's the Redeemer. We're going to have a lot to say about that. And Nomi's father, Avi Nomi, were all the sons of Nachshon ben Aminadab, which means that Nomi and Boaz are first cousins. Right? Is that clear? Should I say it again? Nachshon ben Aminadab has four sons. Elimelech, no, meaning Elimelech married his niece, right? Which was not unusual in the ancient world. Elimelech and Shalmon, who was the father of Boaz, and Mr. Anonymous, Redeemer, and Nomi's father were the four children of Nachshon ben Aminadab, and which makes Nomi and Boaz first cousins. They must have known each other very well, and we will see, in fact, that they do. Okay. V'lo ho'ila lahem zchut avotam b'tzeitam me'eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz, and their merit, the merit of their father, did not save them when they left Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. Okay? No pressure, folks. I didn't make this up. It's Chazal. Okay? So Elimelech is punished despite the fact that he is the son of Nachshon ben Aminadab. Why is then, if that's the case, if that's a family tree, and Nomi is Boaz's first cousin, why does the text say that Nomi had a relative of her husband's from the family of Elimelech, whose name is Boaz? Well, because for purposes of inheritance, land, title to land, and certain kinds of familial responsibilities, the fact that Boaz is Nomi's cousin is less important than the fact that he is Elimelech's nephew. Okay? Is that clear? All right, let's go on. V'tomer Rut HaMoaviyah el Naomi, and Rut the Moabite said to Naomi, El Chana HaSadeh, I will go please to the field, V'alakta Mashibolim Achav Asher Emtzachen Beinam, and I will glean among the sheaves, after those whom I find favor with. V'tomer La Lechibiti, and she said to her, go, my daughter. Okay, what's going on over here? Well, Ruth is a Moabite, and we have to ask why the text identifies her as a Moabite here. We're going to have to pay attention to the places where she is and is not identified as a Moabite. Ruth has already figured out that she is Nomi's Shiksa daughter-in-law, and she's not going to get treated very well by the people around her. Right? She is Nomi's, she's the stranger, she's a Moabite. Nobody likes Moabites very much. They're talking to Nomi, they're not talking to her. She knows the mitzvah of gleaning that allows the poor to glean among the grains, the grain, and to get some kind of sustenance out of the harvest. But she says, I will go glean now. She's asking permission because, you know, what she does is going to reflect on Naomi. Achar asher emtza chen be'enav. Behind those whom I will find favor with them. Meaning, I know, and you know, and I'm not going to say it more explicitly than this, says Ruth, that there are people who aren't going to want me in their field. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to try and glean. I'm going to try and glean because we need food, okay? But I'm not sure that everybody's going to let me into their field, okay? And Naomi says, you know, go. We, yeah, you got to go. ותלך ותבוא ותלקט בשדה אחרי הקוצרים. And she went and she came and she gathered in the field behind the reapers. ויקר מקרה חלקת השדה לבועז אשר ממשפחת אלימלך. And her happening happened in the portion of the field which was Boaz's from the family of Elimelech. Now, when it says Vayker Mikreha, it's almost an ironic comment. There is no such thing as happenstance. She just happened to wander into the field of Elimelech. I'm sorry, of Boaz, who is Elimelech's nephew. Okay. V'hine Boaz ba mi Beit Lechem, and here Boaz was coming from Beit Lechem. V'yomer lakotzrim Hashem imachem. And he said to the reapers, may God be with you. ויאמרו לו, יברכך השם. And they said to him, may Hashem bless you. Rut Rabba explains, what is Boaz, who's a wealthy landowner, harvest time is the busiest time of the year for a farmer. What's he doing in Beit Lechem? Why is he coming from Beit Lechem as opposed to being there in the field? Later we see he sleeps in the threshing floor, right? He doesn't go home. So the backstory that is found in Rut Rabbah is that Boaz had been sitting Shiva for his wife. And so now he's just come back to the fields. And also Chazal explained that Boaz had initiated the practice of saying, God be with you, or may God bless you upon greeting people, because the spiritual state of the Jewish people at this point is kind of low. He's trying to bring God into daily life. Okay, so here he is. He's back in the field. Vayomer Boaz lenaro hanitzav al hakotzrim. And Boaz said to his servant who was standing over the reapers, Lemi ha-na'ara hazot? This is a very interesting question. Whose is that girl? Lemi ha-na'ara hazot? Now, what would we expect the question to be?
Who is she?
Who is that girl? Right? Okay, now I'm going to break a lot of hearts here, but I'm going to do it anyway. Okay. According to Chazal, Boaz was 90 years old at this point, and Rut was 40. Okay, this is not some idyllic, you know, really romantic encounter between the newly widowed, handsome young man and the young girl, right, who has appeared here. It's an encounter between a very old man and someone who is young enough in his eyes that he says, Na'ara. Na'ara could also mean, Na'ara can have two meanings here. Notice here I translated Boaz, where are we? Vayomer Boaz lina'aro. Boaz said to his servant, right? Now, na'ar means youth, but the word na'ar can also indicate a lower social status, right? And that's why servants are called a na'ar. A servant can be 60 years old and still be called a na'ar, right? In French, a waiter is called a garçon, which means a boy, right? Like, you know, that's the function of your social status sort of puts you in the younger bracket by title. So when he says, Lemi ha-na'ara hazot, he might be saying, there's somebody gleaning in my field, right? I've never seen her before. She's clearly of a lower social status because she's gleaning, right? But whose is she? And the question is not as strange as you might think. Remember that we're in a time when the tribal identity of people was a very, very dominant identifying factor. Beit Lechem, everybody's related to everybody else in Beit Lechem because they're all from Yehudah, from the tribe of Yehudah. You know how, like, sometimes, you know, people, one way we can describe ourselves as a people is we're sort of like a very large extended family, right? There's something kind of weird about the way Jews treat each other as family, even when they don't know each other very well. Certainly at this point in history, it's like, who is that? She sticks out like a sore thumb. Maybe she looks a little different. Perhaps she looks a little different. She's also Semitic, but you know, families branch off, but there's probably no one gleaning in his field or working for him that he hasn't seen before. So the question, Limi ha-na'ara hazot, is not so much a question about who is this girl, but where does she fit in? Who does she belong to? What is she doing here? Okay. And we are going to see that this kind of question recurs elsewhere in important redemptive moments elsewhere in Tanakh. One example is when in Bereshit Chaf Zayin, Genesis 27, right? There's something a little strange about the question. The first question that Yitzchak asks here, if we take a look at Bereshit Chaf Zayin, Genesis 27, and Yaakov makes his entrance to his father. Remember, he has decided to go along with his mother's plan to deceive his father. And in Pasuk Yurchet, which is verse 18, right? Vayavo el aviv, vayomer avi, and he came to his father and he said, my father, vayomer hineni. And Yitzchak said, here I am. Mi ata b'ni? Who are you, my son? I don't know about you, but that's a weird question, in my opinion. Okay. If he said, Miata, who are you? Okay, who are you? Who's that? I didn't catch. I didn't hear, right? Who is that? Who's, though he did say Avi, right? He said my father, but, you know, maybe he didn't hear, maybe he didn't catch it, maybe he doesn't know. He wasn't concentrating. But when he says, Miata b'ni, that sounds almost like an existential question, right? In the Gabriel Sevi, heavy duty, you know, existential question rather than a straightforward, you know, what'd you say? Right? Or, you know, the b'ni makes it strange, that my son. The other place that I think is very, very striking, and we're going to look at this motif of recognition and redemption more closely, is in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Zayin, which is the first book of Samuel, chapter 17, the story of David and Goliath, the David and Goliath encounter. And we get a very curious interlude at the end of the chapter. We're going to look at the Gemara on this interlude, because after all, the story of Ruth is in large part very closely tied to the story of David. Ruth is David's ancestress, and the mother of kings, Imash al Malchut, the mother of kings. If you take a look at this verse, it's First Book of Samuel, chapter 7, verse, Pasuk Nun Hei, which is verse 55. Okay, so David, this is a flashback, right? David goes out there and he kills Goliath, and there's a whole interesting sort of conversation that he has with Shaul before Shaul lets him go to kill Goliath. And now we get a flashback to what happens while Shaul is watching him walk out to confront Goliath. Pasuk Nun, hey, v'chiraot Shaul et David yotze likrat ha-plishti. And when Shaul saw David going out toward the Philistine, Amar Avner sa'atzava, he said to Avner, his general, ben mi ze hana'ar Avner? Whose son is this lad? Avner. Okay, Shaul is in his 50s. David is 28. He's around the age of Yehonatan, of Shaul's son. He calls him a lad, but he says, ben mi ze. Whose son is this lad, Avner? Vayomer Avner, chei nafshecha melechim. Yadati, Avner said, by the life of your soul, my king, I don't know. Vayomer HaMelech, and the king said, Sha'alata ben mizeha alem. Go ask who that young man is. Ukeshuv David mehakotet haplishti. And when David returned from striking the Philistine, vaykachoto Avner vayivieu lifnei Shaul, Avner took him and brought him before Shaul, v'rosh haplishti biyado, and the Philistine's head is in his hand, Vayomar elav Shaul, and Shaul said to him, Ben mi hatahana, whose son are you, lad? Whose son are you, boy? Vayomar David ben Abdecha Yishai Beit Halachmi. I'm the son of your servant, Yishai from Beit Lechem. Now, this is extremely strange because if you look at the previous chapter, okay, which is Perek Tetzayin, which is chapter 16, chapter 16, okay, Shaul has started to have episodes of melancholy. And when he has a ruach ra'ah, he gets depressed. So he has these episodes of deep depression, and his servants are concerned about him, and they make a suggestion. Take a look at pasuk tet vav, which is verse 15. So we're in chapter 16, verse 15. Okay, and they say to Shaul. Here, a bad spirit from the Lord is causing you to be fearful, anxiety, fear, panic. Let our master say, your servant, please, our master say, your servants are before you. Yivakshu ish yodam nagen bakino. Let them seek a man who knows how to play the harp. Vaya biot alecha ruach lokim ra'am and it can be ado b'tov lach. And when you have these episodes of bad, you know, bad depression, he'll play and it will be good for you. So Shaul answers. Shaul says to his servants, see for me or find for me a man who knows how to play well and bring him to me. And one of the servants said, and he said, pay attention, ladies and gentlemen, I have seen a son of Yishai from Beit Lechem. He knows how to play the harp, and he's a valorous man. He's a man of war. He's understanding. He's good looking. Okay, and Hashem is with him. So what does Shaul do? Vayishlach Shaul melachim el Yishai vayomer shilchai elai et David bin Chashel batzon. Shaul sends a letter to Yishai and says, send me your son David from the sheep who was with the sheep. And Yishai sends David, right? And David becomes his arms bearer and the person who plays the harp for him and his right-hand man. Now, Shaul is not senile. He gets depressed, but he's not demented and he's not senile. So what is this, whose son are you? Right? What does he mean by whose son are you? Now, the Talmud in Yevamot, the Gemara in Yevamot, answers that question. We're going to look at that Gemara. We're not going to look at it quite yet. But what is striking is that the question Boaz is asking about Ruth is not who is she, but something more like, who does she belong to? Where do I situate her? Where does she fit in? Okay. All right. So let's go back to our perek. We will return to the connection to David shortly, actually probably next week at this rate, but I figure slow and deep is better than fast and shallow. Okay, so to whom is this young girl? Vayan hanar hanitav lakotzrim bayomar, and the servant who was standing over the reapers answered, and he said, Na'ara Moabiyahi, she's a Moabite girl, Hashava ibn Naomi miste Moab, who has returned with Naomi from the fields of Moab. He doesn't say Naomi's daughter-in-law. He doesn't say her name. She's this nuchschlepper who just, you know, she's this like Moabite girl who, you know, came back with Naomi from Ste Moab. Now, the servant is not a person of high social status. This is what a person of low social status is saying about Ruth. She's very much an alien. Nobody is exactly running to put out the welcome wagon and say, do you have a place to stay for Shabbos or something? Right? She is not exactly being embraced by the community. She's being viewed with suspicion. Okay, Vatomer, and she said, meaning this girl who came back with Nomi, Vatomer, and she said, Alaktana basafti ba'omorim acharei akotzrim, I will gather, please, after the reapers. Vatavova ta'amod me'as ha'boker ba'ad atah, and she came and she stood from the morning until now. Ze shivta ha'bayit ma'at, she has sat down in the house very little. There was probably an awning, you know, like a sukkah or something where people could rest from the heat of the sun. This is the hottest time of the year here in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. So he said, look, she's this Moabite woman. She came, she's been gathering, she's been gleaning very industriously. She isn't exactly resting. A sort of backhanded compliment. She's not lazy. Now, Boaz already gets it. Boaz knows who she is now. Vayomer Boaz and Ruth, and Boaz said to Ruth, and he doesn't think of her as Hamoavia. Sorry, one second. He doesn't think of her as Moabite. He is looking at her as Ruth. She has a name for him. In his mind, she has a name. And look what he calls her. Halo shamat biti, haven't you heard, my daughter? Al telchi lilkod b'sadeh acher, don't go to glean in another field. V'gam lo ta'avuri mizeh, and do not pass away from this one. V'cho tidbakin im na'arotai, and thus you should cleave to my maidservants. Einayich b'sadeh asher yiktzoru, your eyes will be on the field where they are reaping, v'halachta achareihen, and you will walk behind them. Halotziviti et ha'ana'arim v'vilti nogech, have I not commanded the servants not to leave you alone, not to bother you? V'tzamit, v'halachta l'hakelim v'shatit me'asher yisharun ha'na'arim, and if you get thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from where the servants dip up water. Okay, now there's something very, very nice here. There's one thing that he does that is quite beautiful. What does he call her? Biti. He's acknowledging that they are related by marriage. This is further evidence for the fact that Boaz is old and she is relatively much younger. He calls her Biti, which means my daughter. That's the same word that here Nomi uses when she talks to her, my daughter. And of course, Nomi does think of her as a relative. And what he says to her is, you know, stay in my field. Don't go somewhere else. He too does not expect her reception in other people's fields to be warm or kind. You stay here. I've already told my servants not to bother you. And if you get thirsty, please feel free to drink my water. Now, you have to understand that in a field where there's a harvest going on, especially where there are a lot of gleaners, the people, not the reapers, not the people who are working for the master, but poor people who are swarming all over the field trying to get whatever grain they can, the landowner doesn't have any obligation to provide food or shelter or water to those people. It's an expensive proposition. Remember, there has just been a famine. This part of the world, there, water isn't, it's not Canada, ladies and gentlemen, where you do not lack for water. In this part of the world, you do lack for water, and the water is for the servant. He said, make yourself at home. You can take water whenever you get thirsty, which is nice. It's kind. But we're left with an interesting question here. What's the question that we're left with?
He knows who she is. Boaz, why is he only giving her this little
crumb? Why isn't he doing more?
Yeah.
Why isn't he doing more? That's the big question about Boaz here. I think there's an answer, which we will not get to here yet. But you would expect It's true. He just got up from mourning for his wife. He got up from Shiva for his wife. And, you know, it could take a person some time to get up to speed. But what we would expect is his first cousin came back from Moav. And he doesn't approach her. He does not approach Naomi. And Naomi doesn't approach him either. And this is an interesting question. Why not? So we're gonna have to come back to this question, because I think there is, to my mind, a satisfying answer, but we will see what happens here. Okay, so he says to her, please, you know, he's basically the first person, as we will see from what follows, is the first person who has spoken to her like a mensch, okay? Vatipol al paneha, and she fell on her face. Vatishtachu alza, and she prostrated herself to the ground. Vatomer elav, and she said to him, Madua matzati chen beinecha lahakireni. Why have I found favor in your eyes to recognize me? Vanochi nochria, and I am a stranger. She senses that this person, and that's why I titled this Lahakireni, and again, the question of recognition as a motif in redemptive moments in Tanakh, she senses that he recognizes her. He is certainly recognizing her as a relative. Nobody else has come anywhere near this sort of approach. Nobody's talking to her. She feels so lonely that his simple courtesy, and that's what it is. It's nice, but it's not more than that. It's his simple courtesy prostrates her, right? She's just totally blown away by even this simple recognition. And then he goes on. Bayan Boaz Bayomuna, and Boaz answered and he said to her, Huget hugadli kol asher asit et chamotech achare motishech. It was surely said to me all that you had done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband. And you abandoned your father and your mother and the house of the land of your birth. And you went to a people that you did not know before. Yishalem Hashem po'olech, may Hashem reward your deeds. Utihi maskoltech shlema me'im Hashem elokei Yisrael. And may your repayment be full from Hashem, the Lord of Israel, Asher bat lachasot tachat kedafan, that you came to shelter under his wings. Now this is very interesting. He has more or less just explicitly compared her to somebody. Who has he compared her to? Look at these words.
Abraham.
You left your father and your mother in the land of your birth. Lech lecha me'atcha me'moladetcha me'beit avicha. He really does recognize, right, that she has done something very, very good. Now, what he has actually heard about her, we don't know. But it does appear that he sees her in a very positive light where other people have not. Now, it's also not clear what else he might have heard about her, or, you know, what impression he might have formed. You know, maybe he's been hearing other things, but he certainly treats her, he compliments her here. You know, of course I recognize you. You've done a very brave and noble thing. I know how you helped your mother-in-law. You know, may God reward you. Okay, so he is giving her that recognition and that dignity. Okay. Vatomel, and she said, Entzachen beinecha aduni, kini chamtani. I will find favor in your eyes, my master, because you have comforted me. V'chi dibalta alev shifchatecha, and you have spoken to the heart of your maidservant. V'anochi lo eheye ke'achat shifchotecha, and I will not be even like one of your maidservants. In other words, what she's saying to him is, I know exactly what my social status is. I know that your servant over there is looking down at me. I know that even Your maidservants think I'm like nothing. But you've comforted me. He's given her that confirmation. He has treated her as a relative. He has acknowledged that what she did was brave and kind and good. You are like Avraham Avinu, kol hakavod. Like he's definitely acknowledged her. And here it gets very, very interesting. Vayomer la Boaz le'etahochem, and Boaz said to her at the time of eating, goshi halom, draw near, v'achalt min halechem, and eat of the bread, v'tavalt pitech b'chometz, and dip your bread, v'achalt min halechem means eat of the food. Lechem is either means bread, literally, or it means food. Ki mitalechem asher ochel, lechem is like a standard, bread is a standard word for a meal or food. The tavat pitech b'chometz, and dip your bread, your pita, in the vinegar. Vateshev mitzad hakotzrim, and she sat at the side of the reapers. Vayitzbat lakali, and he pinched out for her dried corn meaning grain. Vatochal vatispa vatotal, and she ate, and she was full, and she left over. Now, this is an extremely, extremely strange pasuk, I have to tell you. I'll explain why it's a strange pasuk. And next week, we will look at Ruth Rabbah's discussion. It gives six explanations of this pasuk, very, very different and very, very interesting. Boaz says, come here and have something to eat. Okay, that's what we would expect it to say. But the language is a little strange, okay? First of all, goshi halom is not casual speech. Oops. Goshi doesn't, or what we would expect him to say is boi hena, not goshi halom. Hena and halom are both words, adverbs of place. Hena means to hear, halom means to hear. That means like come to hear. The Irish say it that way. They say, come here to me. That's an expression when they say, you know, come here. It's come here to me. Halom and hena both mean to hear. The word we would expect instead of goshi, which is from the root nun gimel shin, lageshet, nagash, approached, right? We would expect boi, come here. We would boi, hena. That would be everyday language that you would expect in a field full of gleaners and reapers, okay? He doesn't use that. He uses very fancy language here, or certainly the author of Megillat Rut, Shmuel Hanavi, uses very fancy language here. The word lageshet, which is this one here, the first word, is used in situations of battle, in situations where you're approaching a special place. It can indicate like a sort of intimate approach. It's a much more loaded word than boi hena. And the word hena, which means to hear, or halom, which is used, the word hena appears 45 times in Tanakh. The word halom appears 11 places in Tanakh, and some of them are pretty loaded places. So, for example, I hope this is not too technical, but in the story of Moshe at the burning bush, God says, al tigash halom, not al tavo hena. Don't come here. Do not. I'm going to go old King James on you. Goshi halom is like approach hither. Boi hena would be come here. Okay. And Moshe is told at the sneh, at the burning bush, al tigash halom. Do not approach hither. Right. It's a more loaded term. The word lageshet, the word halom also appears importantly, oh, we're running out of time, The word halom also appears importantly in Shmuel Bet, second book of Samuel, chapter 7, when David says to God, you have brought me here. After God has refused to let him build a Beit HaMikdash, we're going to look at that pasuk. God has refused to let him build a Beit HaMikdash. And he says, I'm not complaining now that you have brought me here, right? So these words are, to a close reader of the text, these words are kind of too freighted or loaded for the context. So that's the first thing that's strange. The other thing that's strange is, do we really know, really need to know that he told her to dip her bread in vinegar? Do we need to know, like, help yourself to the ketchup? I mean, you know, like, there's mustard on the table, don't hesitate. Do we need to know that he pinched out a portion of grain? That he invited her to the meal, again, is a nice, kind, appropriate gesture. Again, it's not enough, but it's still a nice gesture. But the details are kind of, you know, they provoke questions. Okay, so we're going to stop here. Next week, Bezrat Hashem, what we're going to do is, and I'll stick around for a couple of minutes to take questions. Next week, we're going to look at both the Gemara and Yevamot that explains the David situation and its connection to the root story, but also this source in Root Rabbah that talks in detail about this strange pasuk, where we get all of this detail and this sort of odd language in Boaz's invitation to Ruth to eat. Okay, any questions before I sign off, ladies and gentlemen?
Oh, Simi, just one observation. Interesting that the Gesh Halom here in this Ruth story, who is a descendant of Lot, it echoes the Lot in Sodom story, when the people, the townspeople say to him, Gesh Hala. I don't know.
But they don't say halom. They don't say halom.
Yesh hala.
No, any place, the word, the, you know, anywhere you have that root, nun gimel shin, la geshet, it's a more loaded, it's a heftier word than lavo, to come. It's more weighted. It's more loaded. Absolutely. And halom is also. Yeah, any other questions before we?
Yes, I'd like to ask a question. When you said Naomi says, there is a relative of my husband, does she
say? She doesn't say it. The pasuk says it.
Okay, the
narrator says it. The narrator says it.
Plony considered at all, or just Boaz? Plony, I was told's name is Tov, and he wasn't. Was it that he did? It wasn't a landowner. He was an elder who sat by the gate.
Everybody's a landowner.
So, was he considered at all, or just straight to Boaz?
No, she. That's what's striking is this. The first pasuk of Perek Bet says, Nomi had a relative of her husband's, Boaz, which means that if Nomi is going to turn to anybody, it would be Boaz.
So they knew right away that Plony were told was out of the question.
No.
That he would. No, we're not talking. We haven't said anything about.
He went right to Boaz. We skipped him, or the pasuk skips him.
The pasuk is, remember, what's happening in Perek Bet is we are going to be introduced to Boaz. So the first sentence of the Perek is, okay, when you see Ruth show up in this field, understand that this person is her husband.
I understand, but I just feel that's all it's
at this point. Pretend you didn't read the rest of the story. At this point, all it's saying to us is we're going to mention a guy named Boaz in two psukim. So understand that Boaz is a relative of Elimelech.
And besides his wife, didn't his children die? There was something that wasn't right there that
so there is a so there's a midrash there. He doesn't appear to have any children. Why didn't he have children? I don't know. I'm not familiar with that. He doesn't appear to have children.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
Yael, you had a question?
I have a question, mm-hmm. and that is, I'm wondering why, of course, the question you raised, why Boaz did not do more for Naomi. After all, she is a relative.
Right.
I guess I'm preempting that. I said, I'm thinking, I believe he has some, you know, negative feelings about the fact that Elimelech went up and left with kind of abandoned. And so there is that whole backstory of having negative feelings about that part of the family.
He doesn't seem to treat Ruth that way, though.
But she's not the direct person that, you know, had abandoned. She's like,
well,
the daughter.
Let me see if I can put it this way. Elimelech, I think, especially in the time of the Tanakh, the understanding would have been that Naomi didn't really have a choice. She had to follow her husband and her children.
Right.
It seems a little harsh, or certainly it's still a little bit strange. Had Elimelech come back penniless and Boaz ignored him, we could get that. We would understand that. But why not approach Naomi?
Yeah.
We'll have to address that question.
Okay. Good.
Okay. Yael, your hand is raised.
Yeah, I had a quick question. Where does it tell us, Nachshon ben Aminadab's family tree, that we know that...
At the end of Ruth, the last couple of psukim of Ruth.
But it says Nachshon?
Well, let's take a look, everybody. Anybody who has a Mikilat Ruth in front of them. Okay. Hang on, let me just find it.
Chapter 4, verse 20.
Mm-hmm. So it says, Ele Todot Peretz, right? These are the children of Peretz. Peretz is correct. the son of Yehuda with Tamar. Yeah.
So because it's Nachshon ben Yehuda, okay.
Now it's Nachshon. Chetzron had a son named Ram. Ram had a son named Aminadab. Aminadab had a son named Nachshon. Nachshon had a son named Shalmon. Shalmon had a son named Boaz. And Boaz had a son named Oved. Oved was the father of Yishai. And Yishai was the father of David.
So it literally says Nachshon at the end.
That's right there. It's in Pasuk Chaf. In other words, we know that Peretz is the son of Yehuda.
Yes.
Right? So it's Yehuda, Peretz, and then it follows it down to Boaz. That's the family tree at the end of the Peretz.
So this is Boaz's family
tree. Well, David's family
tree. And how do we know who Naomi's father is?
We don't. Chazal don't give him a name either.
But they're assuming he comes from that line, well, because they're related.
Right. What's important again is Elimelech's relationship to Boaz, not Naomi's, right? Because in terms of land, who matters here?
In terms of like Yibum?
In terms of Yibum or inheritance. But listen up. If a man dies intestate, right? He doesn't have any children, or rather, a man dies without children, right? If he dies without sons, his inheritance goes to his daughters. If he dies without daughters, who does his inheritance go to? His nearest living male.
Brother.
He doesn't have a brother. His nearest living male relative. Right?
Okay.
So in terms of who owns land or can redeem land or who gets first right of refusal on land, that's where you go. That's what you go by. According to the person who is closest to Elimelech is Ploni Almoni.
Ploni Almoni.
Right? Ploni Almoni, who is the Goel. That's why he has to consult Ploni Almoni. Who's next in line to redeem land? Boaz. Okay, It's later here than it is there. So I'm going to sign off. If you do want to send an email, send it to the Torah in Motion site and it will get to me. Okay?
Thank you. Toda rabba.
Very, very welcome. Laila Tov.
Laila Tov.
It's Tov.
I mean, whatever.
Yom HaTzmaut Sameach.
Yom HaTzmaut Sameach. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.